are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I mean, he could run away with his job.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Dare I say he runs away with the job by May?
Oh, God. All right, let's... that's absolutely fucking atrocious.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
This game would have been a lot funnier had you given me a stat that it wasn't Mitch Haniger just to make me look like an asshole.
Yeah, I could have done that, but...
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode of the Prospect Pod is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man, and I'm even better now that we got one of my best buddies back on the show. So it's nice having you back, man.
It's good to be back. Unfortunately, had some family turmoil. Won't get into it on the podcast because I want this to kind of be a positive experience, but I would like to say publicly thank you to all the people who reached out to me and sent well wishes and prayers for me and my family. So it really did mean a lot. But let's talk some prospect stuff. I think this episode of this podcast may be a little bit different than yours too. One, I'm not a prospect guy like you are, and like Andy and Mike are. But I do play in a ton of dynasty leagues and keeper leagues, and so we're going to talk about some prospects. We're going to talk also about some guys who aren't necessarily prospects anymore, but maybe you're forgotten about a little bit.
Yeah.
But first, you told me something before we started recording, so we're gonna I've been kind of out of commission the last couple days, and really haven't seen very much baseball, very much news. So when you told me that Clint Frazier asked for Mickey Mantle's number, I was like, wait, what? So what is going on here?
Yeah, I guess there's some controversy surrounding it. I keep reading things on Twitter saying he's essentially denied that he did this, but evidently Clint Frazier asked the Yankees if he could wear number 7. And if you don't know, number 7 belongs to one of the greatest baseball players of all time, Mr. Mickey Mantle. So I thought that was brash. Set
now,
of cojones on the ginger there.
Do you think this was like a mistake? Because, I mean, he's a kid. And he may not really – I mean, I'm sure he knows who Mickey Mantle was. But, I mean, if you had asked me prior to this podcast what Mickey Mantle's number was, it might have taken me a little while to kind of come up with it. Because, I mean, he played before any of us were born.
No, sure. But, I mean, there's a lot of – the Yankees maybe don't have this because there might be the one exception to this rule. But every team's kind of got – weird guys that have numbers retired. I say weird guys as in like really good guys for the team, but not Hall of Fame level players. But I mean, to ask for an Inner Circle Hall of Famer, like I consider Mickey Mantle to be one of the top 10 offensive players of all time. And you just can't do that. I admire the brash that the young kid has. You gotta like the confidence.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge, I don't really care that much about retired numbers to begin with. I just don't. I mean, I get the history of the game, and I love the history of the game, and it's really interesting to me. But the idea that, you're gonna retire a number, like, to me, the only number that should be retired is number 42. Because that truly means something. You know? Jackie Robinson's number, I think, really actually means something special. And don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from Mickey Mantle, but to me... There's a social aspect, obviously.
Yeah,
to
civil
Jackie
rights.
Robinson.
Yeah,
and that to me, and I love the fact that on Jackie Robinson Day, anybody can wear it, and pretty much everybody does. Like, I can't remember if anybody last year decided not to wear it, I think that is really cool. I really couldn't care less about Clint Frazier wanting to wear number 7. It's a fucking number. And no one is alive anymore, for the most part, that you know was really paying attention to Mickey Mantle. So, well, that's probably not true, but I wasn't alive, so I don't give a shit.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I just, like I said, I think there's like certain guys that you can ask that of, but not one of the all-time greats. So, like I said, though, I admire the brash the kid has and the kind of swagger you have to ask for that. I don't know if that means anything to you, but I think the confidence is awesome. So,
I mean, it doesn't mean anything weird to me. You know, like I get what you're saying, but there's been plenty of guys who were super confident and end up doing nothing in the major leagues.
Yeah, and like they said, he's denying
that. Brandon Wood was super confident too.
Yeah. Well, he's probably the best at whatever he's doing now. So how about that?
Yeah, washing cars or you know, handing out fries or coaching high school baseball.
I hope he's not handing out fries.
I hope he's not listening to this podcast.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
If you are, thank you for the download, Brandon. So let's move on to some actual baseball stuff. And like I said, we're not going to just focus on prospects today, though we will talk about a number of guys who are prospects and made the major leagues. So, but first let's start off with kind of two post-hype guys. And these guys were big-name prospects at one point, and because of, you know, not being able to perform up to the levels people thought they would, they are no longer really considered or looked at in that same vein, but they still have, I think, a little bit of hype surrounding them. And I'm talking about Joey Gallo and Archie Bradley. So I heard you guys talk about Joey Gallo on Monday's podcast. But why don't you real quick reiterate what you kind of said there?
Yeah, I brought these two guys up specifically because, I mean, they just missed, Joey Gallo just missed being prospect eligible this year by...
Which seems crazy to me.
Yeah, he just missed it, I want to say last year by, like, going into, like, the last weekend of the season, he's basically when he eclipsed that threshold for service time. But I kind of wanted to bring these two guys up because I feel like they're in this kind of no man's land for fantasy baseball because – and I would throw A.J. Reed in this group, probably a couple others off the top of my head that I can't think of right now. I would throw them in this group kind of like where they're not prospects, but people are down on them a lot, but I think they still can contribute. And I guess what do you do with them from a fantasy sense?
I think now is the time, at least for me – that I love to buy guys like this. I mean, Garrett Richards was one of these guys. You know,
a lot of guys are these guys.
The thing about the fantasy baseball industry as a whole and fantasy baseball players is they have really, really short memories. And while that can be good for certain things, they tend to forget that these guys were top prospects for a reason. I mean, Joey Gallo has immense, immense upside, and we saw it with that moonshot that he hit out. I believe it was opening day, at least for the Rangers.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a lot of talent. You know, the one thing you guys didn't mention on Monday that I was really a little disappointed in, and I would have brought up had I been on, is I think this is an audition for him.
Yeah, it is. I think exactly. I kind of alluded to that when I said it was kind of the most important 10 days of his life.
Yeah. I mean, because I think this is the time in which he gets a chance to show off his talent. And if he can hit for any sort of decent average, you know, and walk like he usually does, and still flash the immense power, which, like I said, we saw already, I think he has a real shot to get moved in a deal, you know, and I'm sure that a team like the White Sox with Jose Quintana wouldn't mind getting him as a part of a deal, you know, for their stud pitcher that they are actively trying to move.
Yeah, and the thing with, like, Texas is actually good. Texas gets a lot of credit for developing guys, and this actually hasn't been the case for them. I mean, the Profar situation is kind of a mess.
Justin Smoke didn't pan out.
And he was one of their guys. I mean, they had Even guys going as far back as they had Adrian Gonzalez and traded him, and he
look
turned
at,
out.
Look at Chichi Gonzalez and Martin Perez.
They can't develop any pitching, and they have a good eye for finding this talent. It's whether or not they are able to convert it. I mean, I know we're talking 2-game sample here, but with Gallo, this is important because you're not looking at the raw stats; you're looking at how he got those stats. And with those 8 plate appearances, yes, it's only 8. He struck out 4 times, mm-hmm. and that's not a good thing.
What you want.
And last year, in his brief cup of coffee, he struck out 19 times in 30 plate appearances, and that's not you can't do that. But here's where the upside comes in. He's hit 8 career home runs, right? 6 of them have gone over 430 feet. So that gives you an idea of what kind of power you're dealing with.
Well,
that's exactly what it is.
In spite of the fact that he strikes out a ton, and he does strike out a ton, those 161 plate appearances came with a 13% walk rate.
Yeah.
And we are living in a day and age where if you can walk, the strikeout rates can be acceptable. Now, 50% isn't acceptable.
No.
That's not
63 last year in his short stint.
We've been talking about a guy all off season that I think you and I both love and have talked up. In Keon Broxton, that strikes out at a good, 35-40% clip.
Yeah.
And that is acceptable in the major leagues. And so would it surprise me? I mean, I think it would take more than just Joey Gallo to especially considering what the White Sox got in return from like Adam Eaton and Chris Sale. But he could definitely be a piece of a package going back. And Texas has got plenty of minor leaguers to trade. Going back to Chicago for Quintana, I think if he's available, why not take a shot on him? In anything, 12 teams or larger, especially for this little run. But I think if he gets hot and really starts connecting, and if we're talking in a month, if we're talking about a guy who's hit 7 home runs, and is still walking 13% of the time, I think we're talking about a guy that will be moved pretty early and could end up, a place like Chicago is a great place to hit. I know Arlington is too, but I think Gallo is definitely a guy to buy in on.
It's worth paying attention to. We brought up the Adrian Beltre contract extension. That kind of probably pushes him off third base for Texas if he does stay there. And it's worth knowing, I mean, the only obstacle at first is Mike Napoli right now. He's on a 1-year deal. They have Profar there.
Well,
he's
and
not
I mean the only obstacle
of guy.
Which is Sinchu Chu, and who knows if
yep.
he can stay healthy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's going to have opportunity this year in Texas. I mean, this is his. If Gallo's, this is the biggest year of Gallo's career to this point because I mean, you remember in the Futures game, it was him and Chris Bryant. Remember they were talked about in the same breath, like oh, power hitting third baseman and putting on shows and batting practice. It was them two slugging it out.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, the careers have gone different routes since. But this is the chance for Gallo, and this is the most important 10-day stretch, and however long Beltre's out, if he can hit, he could stay up. That DH role, like you said, is Chu. I mean, the Shields seems to be coming out and maybe have a spot, but Carlos Gomez is out there. Nomar Mazara might fall on his face. There's a wide variety of places he can go. So this is a big season for him.
Let's talk about DeShields, because do you think he has a role?
He should. I mean,
it
based on
the
training,
it doesn't feel like it so far.
No, I prefer DeShields to Profar this year. I don't know why Texas doesn't as far as left field goes. I mean, Ryan Rue is in the mix. He got at bats there yesterday. Even right now, DeShields is DHing, which is kind of weird. Maybe it's just kind of one of those give somebody a day thing. But he's DHing today, and with what he did this spring with all the stolen bases, he hit his way on into a job. He's kind of an afterthought. I'm pulling up the numbers now. I want to make sure I get it right. I can't find the numbers for this spring. They're not there anymore. But I believe he stole like something like 12 bases or something like that.
I want to say it was 11. Here's the thing with me, and I know you guys talked. I mean, Alex Chamberlain, who was on Monday, unfortunately I wasn't able to make it. But he talked about loving him. Delino DeShields is a fourth outfielder. Now, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, sure. But this organization needs that.
And we've seen in the past fourth outfielders have success in fantasy, especially if you have an elite skill, especially speed, a la Jerrod Dyson.
Mm-hmm.
For years, has had value, under especially underrated value, stealing, you know, 20, 30, almost 40 bags in years, you know, off the bench for the most part, or working as part of a platoon. I was really down on DeShields last year because I think people forgot his overall skill set doesn't, you know, profile as an everyday guy. I think he is an interesting guy, but I think the hype train late went a little bit crazy, where you started seeing him go for real money in AL only.
Yeah, it was weird. It came out real strong.
Well, it's because he was stealing all those bases, and everybody went, "Well, look at." Well, you know, look at the outfield in Texas. He has a real chance.
This touches on your bold prediction you made for your Fangraphs piece. You said stolen bases of the new starting pitching. I don't think people might have been confused on what you meant, but I knew exactly what you meant. Overvalued.
Yeah, that speed definitely got overvalued, because there is cheap guys out there, you know, and I think maybe if they fix the balls that were flying out last year, we might actually get...
For entertainment value, I hope they don't.
I mean, you know, yeah, of course, but I also don't think they want to see pitchers getting lit up every night. So, but yeah, I mean, I like DeShields. If you can, you know, if you've rostered him cheaply, if he's available,
he was good for a reserve pick. Yeah, he's not good when
you're
spending.
Yeah, I mean, if you're expecting Delino DeShields to carry you to a championship, I think you're sorely mistaken. And I think if you have him right now, and you can afford to lose the speed that he's going to bring you, because I would project that he steals 20 bases at the major league level this year, and I think that could be really valuable to him. But if you can afford to lose those 20 stolen bases, sell him now, because his value will never be higher.
Yeah, I agreed.
Let's talk about Archie Bradley, because, I mean, he was a top pitching prospect. You know, I think at one point he was the top pitching prospect in all of baseball. I remember seeing him as a top 10 guy on a number of lists for years. He was never able to really develop another pitch that would make him kind of really compete as a starter.
Still doesn't have that pitch.
No,
still
doesn't have it. Now that he's in the bullpen, do you think that this is a guy that could have elite impact either as a holds guy or maybe even a closer?
Yeah, I do. I was watching the game last night, which is why I pushed for him to come beyond this list, because I loved what I saw. The broadcast for Arizona, they have one of the best broadcasting crews out there, and I was listening to them talk, and they said Archie Bradley was extremely vocal this year about if he wasn't going to make the starting rotation for the Diamondbacks, that he wanted to be in the major league bullpen, because he was flat out adamant. He told the Diamondbacks, "I've got nothing more to prove in the minor leagues, so I want to get major league hitters out." And I'm glad they did it, because he put on a show last night, for lack of a better word. I know we kind of talking about this, and I know this is easier said than done, because Syndergaard does it for 7-8 innings a night, but he looked like Noah Syndergaard out on the mound last night. Faced 10 hitters, struck out 7 of them. Or excuse me, he got 10 outs. He got 10 outs. 7 of those outs were via the punch out. 96 to 98 on the fastball, and the 90-mile-an-hour wipeout slider. He was just throwing those two pitches, and he was just mowing hitters down. It was a show. It was really impressive. I want to make the point where I think he can kind of should be the closer of the future in Arizona. I mean, you look at what they have out in the bullpen. I think he could be that guy, because I think Jake Baird is looked at as that guy, and he kind of is a meh. You know what I mean? He's more of a 6-inning reliever, because he walks too many guys. I mean, yeah, Bradley, still the command wasn't – he wasn't hitting the spots like pinpoint control last night. But, I mean, when you're throwing that hard with a 90-mile-an-hour slider, you don't have to have pinpoint control. So it was impressive, and I wanted to include him. I want to know what your thoughts about him are.
I think that
buy anywhere you can is what I'm doing. But
yeah, I think he is the closer by August 1st.
Yeah, they got Rodney out there now, right? I mean,
yeah, and I mean, let's be honest. Like, don't get me wrong. I like certain aspects of the Diamondbacks, but they're not competing this year.
Yeah, some people think they are.
Come on, look at that rotation. I mean, you know,
I think
don't get me wrong. The rotation is interesting, and especially for fantasy. If he's, I'm a Zach Greinke guy, so you know, I'm hoping he bounces back. Patrick Corbin, you know, showed some stuff in the spring. So did, you know, Shelby Miller. Some people, you know, Darius Austin, our own, you know, Darius Austin.
He's got a poster of Robbie Ray up in his house in England.
Dude, I mean, he has a life-size Robbie Ray doll that he keeps in the closet. And you know what? I think some people are down on Taiwan Walker, and I understand it. But I think there is some reasons to buy into Walker, especially after a promising spring.
Serious upside in that rotation, though.
That's yeah, sure. So, but that bullpen is just god-awful. It is, you know, the ghost of Christmas past all throughout that bullpen. And I have some serious questions about the bottom half of that lineup. And you know, David Peralta, who, you know, missed the majority of last year, you know, with injury. I like some of their guys. Could they surprise? Sure. But I don't think they will. And I think people may actually be sorely disappointed with the lack of stolen bases you may see from this team as well, from a fantasy perspective. But either way, I don't think Arizona is competing with the top three in this division. And so I think but I don't think they're very far away necessarily.
See, and so I put them with Colorado.
I think Colorado wins the division.
I don't think Colorado. I think Colorado hovers around 500.
I
think that's a step forward for them, obviously. But
when Desmond comes back to that lineup, you're going, and if they can just tread water until Desmond comes back, that lineup is just stacked.
David Dahl too.
And David Dahl, and I just think that they've added enough pitching. You know, with Gray, you know, topping that rotation. And that bullpen is so lights out. It's just
for now until Greg Holland breaks again. But.
Yeah, but I mean, I've been a Greg Holland detractor all off season, and look where that's gotten me. He's obviously the closer, it seems, at this point. But
yeah, I got an interesting Twitter question. I'm going to pivot off this.
Go right ahead.
Now with the Archie Bradley discussion, we're kind of talking about deep dynasty grabs for closers, right, for this year or even beyond. I got a question about Nick Birdie. From Ray, I don't
Nick
even know
Birdie
how to pronounce
or Zach
that.
Birdie?
Because Nick Birdie, the White Sox.
Okay.
Zach Birdie's in Minnesota.
Okay, yeah. I thought, no, it's the other way around.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I'm a big
right.
Zach Birdie guy.
I knew that. You're right.
Yeah, I'm get a those huge Zach up. Birdie guy. I wrote an article at FanGraphs talking about, I did a two, actually. They were guys who were being taken outside the top 450 picks in NFBC that, you know, in deeper formats, I was stashing.
Yeah.
And Zach Birdie made the list. I think Zach Birdie is the closer in Chicago by the end of the year.
I am kind of with you. I just don't know. I'm kind of, the more and more I think about the White Sox situation is I kind of think, I don't even know if they trade Quintana this year, to be honest. And piggybacking off that is Nate Jones is signed for super cheaply that's not even good English.
But think of the haul in this day and age that the White Sox get. And the White Sox aren't looking to compete in 2 years. This is a team that's building for four or five years.
I think they are. I think they're actually looking for 2 years out. I mean, that's kind of everything they kind of talked about.
If they are, then it's insane. Because there's no way that team, as constructed, is competing in 2 years. I mean, maybe they're the Phillies, where they're giving people a run for their money. There's no way the White Sox are competing for a World Series or even a playoff spot, in my mind, in that division in 2 years' time. I think, to me, and the reason I wrote about word about Birdie is, one, did you see his velocity in the spring?
Yeah, I did. It was repeatedly over 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
He was sitting. He was, like, sitting 100 miles an hour.
And he was hitting spots, too. They drafted him in the first round because he was a guy who was going to be ready to go pretty quickly. They knew
that was before they shifted their philosophy to tanking, I guess. Mm-hmm.
I think they trade both Jones and Robertson. I know our very own Mike Warner. He's a big fan of Jones this year. He took him in a draft we were on over the weekend. But to me, I think Robertson's the first to go at the deadline, and then during the waiver period, you see Jones go,
That. I think Jones might be the first to go because his contract is so cheap and so long. Yeah, exactly.
If the Yankees got what they got for Chapman last year, I think the White Sox could get that for Jones.
Yep,
because
exactly right.
He's so controllable for so long.
Yes,
Yep. And so to me, Zach Birdie is the guy to stash in keeper and dynasty leagues, or if you're looking for a wild card, if you're in a 20-team league and you're looking for a wild card at the end of the year, I drafted him in a 16-team league. I spent my last pick of the supplemental draft on him, and it's a team I'm rebuilding anyways, but just the shot, you know, he could be the closer, and I think he's the closer of the future, so I'm a big fan of Birdie.
Yeah, the only thing, I mean, with him, he was drafted last year, like you said, out of the University of Louisville, and he made it all the way to AAA last year and threw 9 games, had 16 innings, 22 strikeouts. I mean, he had 11 walks. Obviously, the walks are the concern with a guy that throws that hard, but he's got a high floor because he does such a fantastic job of limiting hits. So I'm kind of with you. I think it's going to take both Jones and Robertson to get traded, but when they do, I think they have to go to this guy. I think he's ahead of Carson Fulmer on the depth chart already for that role. I'm right there with you. I think Birdie's the guy, those two need to get moved.
And I think the White Sox want to keep Fulmer as a starter for as long as they can. They have no reason
to. And why not? Yeah, exactly.
You did mention, I believe it's Zach Birdie's brother, Nick Birdie, who pitches for the Twins. I think he's also a sneaky guy for closing. I mean, you know, I know there are a lot of people who are for some reason on the Brandon Kinsler bandwagon. I don't get why, but yeah, I don't think he's long for the rule. Glenn Perkins might as well be done. I think if he does get healthy, they give him back the role, but I mean, that would only to be to shop him to another team. You know, there's some people who are a big Presley fan. I'm not. I actually like JT Chargois. And I don't know if I butchered that.
I'm like speechless here. You got that.
It's French. So, and I, French was actually my first language. So, there you go. Though I always pronounce Travis Darnot's name wrong.
Inside information. So now you punked me.
Exactly. But, I actually like him as a dark horse guy, but Nick Birdie might be the closer of the future. And how cool would that be? Two brothers, future closers in the same division.
Yeah, I like that. I pulled up Nick Birdie's number. He only pitched 3 games last year. He had a bruised elbow, which kind of shut him down for the whole season, which is kind of weird. Max effort delivery here, power slider. Does a fantastic job of getting ground balls. Does a little better job at that than his younger brother. That would be crazy, too.
I'd like to see him work the change up a little bit better. And I mean, the command is a problem. Like, the thing with Zach Birdie, his brother in Chicago, is that he is polished. Like, honestly, he should be closing now. The only reason he's not is that they don't want to start his clock, and they want to try to get pieces for Robertson and Jones. Nick Birdie is not polished. He has no idea where the ball's going. He could be a guy who's effectively wild. But if he could, like get that change up just to be an average pitch, and find some control of the strike zone, I think you're looking at a guy who could be a future stud closer as well.
I'm right there with you. Can't argue with anything you said.
All right. Let's move on to some kind of Yankees news, and talk about, Eloy Jimenez, he's on the DL with a shoulder injury. Does this worry you at all?
Shoulder injury a little bit. He's a big, strong dude. I mean, power's his game. But it's going to delay him for about 2 to 3 weeks to start the year for Eloy. He tore up the Midwest League. He's going to go to the High A, the Carolina League, when he's healthy. But I'm very curious to see what he does when he gets back. Obviously, there's no reason for the Cubs to push him because he's a monster. As of right now, I'm not changing his stock any. I think that'd be premature to do that. But, I mean, it is something to monitor, that's for sure, because shoulder injuries can have history of lingering. So,
yeah, I'm not worried. I mean, this kid's young enough to be my son.
Yeah, he shouldn't be. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, doing you wrong, could it slow him down, you know, a little bit? Sure. But, I mean, he's not going to be up for another 2 to 3 years anyways.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Did I sound worried too?
You just put it on the note. So, I mean, I didn't know if you were. I think he's still, to me, a top 10 prospect in fantasy baseball right now. I still think he's up, you know, 2019, you know, probably midway point. And I think he is a stud. I mean, absolutely love Jimenez. you know, maybe if you want, you know, maybe in your deeper dynasty leagues where people are plugged into, you know, really plugged into prospects, maybe you try to go and trade for him right now.
Get a real, or get a, or float him out there for a real, real big fish, and you never know if someone will bite. You know,
unless I'm trying to win now, which I'm always, if I'm trying to win now, you know, flags fly forever. I'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah, some teams aren't in that position. So,
but if you know, can get for controllable me, I'm guy. Trying to buy Jimenez wherever I can.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that. I mean, him and Victor Robles are next year, and Luis Robert are, those three guys are going to be in the top conversation for the top prospect in the game.
Yeah.
So, and Robert, that's another thing. Go to circle back to that. He's rumored to, like, White Sox seem to be the team that's going to end up with him. And that's another point to me that, I mean, there's a lot of teams involved. Cincinnati's supposed to be going hard. St. Louis is supposed to be going hard. But everything I've read, Baseball America seems to think it's a slam dunk that he ends up with the White Sox. And, I mean, that factors in another, that's another point toward their quick rebuild. Because he's already 22 years old, I believe. So he's not going to be in the minors long. And I think you're looking at where the White Sox are going to be extremely competitive in 2019.
Well, let's talk about the White Sox then. Do you think it's a foregone conclusion? I mean, obviously Frazier's going because Frazier's in the last year of the free agent anyway. I mean, unless for some reason they decide that the pick is worth anything, you know, to them, or more to them what they can get on the market.
That those new CBA kind of changes that. They're kind of limited to a second round pick, I believe now, right?
I thought it was still kind of a sandwich pick.
You know what it was, and I think there's no penalty
for signing.
That's what it is. Yep. Okay, you're right. I stand corrected on that. Yeah, I mean, I think your question is going to be: do they trade Quintana?
Yeah, and then that is my question: do they trade Quintana? You know, do they trade a Nate Jones?
I kind of think no.
I think
Abreu stays because I think they like to keep a mentor for Moncada. I think that's a real thing. White Sox do one thing they do well is they have success with Cuban imports, Alexei Ramirez, guys like
Diane
that.
Diane Vicieta.
Well, he was good for a half season.
I love Vicieta. Don't get me wrong.
I never
thought Vicieta got a fair shake.
He didn't. But now, if he would have played. If Vicieto came to the States 10 years earlier, he would have got all the opportunities. But now with the big push for OBP in the last few years, kind of shoved him out of the game, and it's unfortunate because you need guys like that. I guess he's tearing it up in Japan. In case you were wondering where he is,
good for him.
Yeah, but I think they keep Abreu because number one, Abreu's got a below market value contract for probably 2 or 3 more years. I think then they have arbitration control over him. I believe. So I think he's going to be affordable for the production you're going to get because he's one of the top, you know, 6 to 8 first basemen in the game still. I don't think that's up for debate. I think they keep him around to mentor Moncada because I think that's valuable. You know, Moncada leaned heavily on David Ortiz in Boston, and obviously the Latino players need somebody to help them get acclimated and such like that. I mean, Giolito, Alec Hansen is going to be around that time. Michael Kopech is going to be up around that time. Reynaldo Lopez should be up now with Giolito coming up soon after him. I think those guys are studs. I like him.
I know you do. I don't.
I think he compares similar to Francis Martes of the Astros, personally.
I think for me, like, the Abreu question will be answered by Zach Collins at bats and position.
Yeah, and they got Collins. I mean, they're deep in time.
If Collins is playing more catcher than he is first base, you know, near the deadline, that tells you what they think
that's a good guy
Collins. If he starts playing first base, then I think Jose Abreu starts going because that means they don't believe in him as a catcher and they are going to make room for him on the major league squad.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Does that count? And then, like I said, I think they're a slam dunk for Robert, and I think he instantly plug him into center field and let that dude play because, I mean, you heard scouts. I mean, this is complete bullshit. I don't believe this for a second, but you heard some scouts said he was the best player in the world, and I don't know how you can say that with the talent we have in the major leagues right now. But that's still high praise. Obviously, it's incorrect.
And the Japanese Babe Ruth, who is yet to play in the major leagues.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani. I got a question about Robert and Ohtani for this podcast, so maybe we'll cover them both. I think the second either one of them comes here, they're prospect number one in baseball.
Where, to be honest with you. If you were drafting, like, let's say let's say,
are those guys eligible?
Yeah, I'm saying, if you were like not, I'm not talking about a supplemental draft. I'm talking actual draft, dynasty draft, first year dynasty draft. Where would you be taking those guys?
It's a fun question because before I got into the podcast,
I mean, you said like you would take Moncada in like the fifth or sixth round, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I think I did do that this offseason in a startup dynasty.
So are you taking both of those guys above Moncada?
I would take Robert about that area. I think he's about fifth, sixth round, and I would go higher on Otani. I wouldn't hesitate third, fourth round.
See, for me, until I know whether he's a hitter or a pitcher, I can't.
You know what? No, he'll come up as he'll be a pitcher when he's here. There's no doubt.
Then, yeah, for me, I couldn't take him that high.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is we did the year Daisuke came over with Boston, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did my first obviously I played fantasy baseball well beyond that, but I did my first dynasty keeper league, and the team with the last pick in the first round took Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Oh, wow.
So, because, I mean, you're reading all the hype, you know what I mean? You're getting sucked into it.
At that point, I was mostly playing, I think I had a couple other, like, redraft leagues, but for the most part, my main league and my main money league was my old ale-only, it was an auction keeper format. And he went for, out of the $260 budget, he went for $22.
And that was probably a fair return in his first year, right? I mean, he was good.
It was a good return for the first year.
Yeah, and then after that,
Because, I think he had, what, two good years? Now I got to go look up Dice K.
But I just wanted to compare it to that because I think it's the hype is going to be that times whatever. And I think, you know, he's going to have all the big fish going after him because bonus pools are going to limit it, though. So he's going to probably have to wait another 2 years. While I think Robert could get cleared as soon as tomorrow, from my understanding. I don't think he will, but he could be in this class, which eliminates teams like the Cubs, Red Sox, Yankees can't sign him. So he's going to be limited. I mean, to the Cardinals, White Sox, Padres, and I think the Reds are the teams that I've seen the most linked to him, just because they can.
Yeah.
A lot of other teams are over their bonus pools.
Daisuke had his first year wasn't great. But his second year was amazing.
It's crazy how you just misremember things when you.
Well, but I mean, he still put up 204 innings. It was 440 ERA, almost nine strikeouts per nine. So I mean, strikeout an inning, but I mean, he walked 3.5 per nine. But
he nibbled a little bit more than I thought he was going to when he came here. I remember
his second year. I mean, he put up a sub 3 ERA, eight and a quarter strikeouts per nine. You know, he still walked a ton of guys, but gave up virtually no home runs.
He started a game in Japan, I believe, last night for whoever team he's playing for.
Yeah,
he's still kicking around. Yeah, he's still kicking around.
He's only 36.
Yeah, him and Hiroki Kuroda just was out there and retired last year, so it's crazy.
That's awesome. One of these days, that's a bucket list item for me. I want to go to Japan and Korea and see some games.
Yeah, definitely, man. Time me up.
All right, let's move on and talk about the Yankee. Gleyber Torres
plan.
I mean, are you
I'm all for it?
You're all for it. So explain what's happening, and then explain why you're for it.
Well, I was reading an article today. It was written by the Yankees, and there was some interesting quotes in there. And basically, what Torres is doing is they want him to be more versatile. And it was kind of slamming the Cubs there for a second because. They said they don't want to make the Starlin Castro mistake with Torres, and I was like, "What does that mean?" And basically what that was is when the Cubs just basically how that story went down is when Castro said in the interview, it says, "Hey, they called him one morning and says, hey, you're not playing shortstop anymore. You're playing second base, and you're in the lineup today at second base, and he's never played it before." And they don't want to run into that situation because the Yankees have movable pieces. They kindly listed Chase Headley amongst one of their assets, which you know how that goes. They kind
of
have to do that.
That was really nice.
Yeah, but they have D.D. Gregorius, who is an asset, and you know this. Who's their second baseman right now? I'm blanking.
Castro.
Yeah, and Castro and D.D. Gregorius are good enough to start on any major league team. So I think they're moving Torres around. What Torres is going to do, and he's going to rotate 8 days. He's in Double A in Trenton. For the Yankees there. He's going to play three games at shortstop in a row, back-to-back-to-back, play two at third, back to back, and then two at second, and then he's going to have a day off, and then he's going to restart that cycle. And I could not be more for that, because he is a stud defensively. He's going to carry anywhere. If he's a stud shortstop, he's going to be able to play those other two spots. And is covering their rear end. I mean, say Didi Gregorius rips up a knee or something, and you moved Torres to second base full time, you look dumb. You're going to get caught with it.
Well,
Torres hasn't played shortstop in 6 months, and you know what I mean? You don't want to be in that situation. So I'm all for this.
And I'd have to check for sure Didi Gregorius' contract. I know they've got at least one more year of arbitration for him.
Yeah.
But they may have a second.
Castro's is a couple years too, because he signed a team friendly deal with the Cubs a while back.
Yeah,
so he should still have 3 years. So at least on that.
But I mean, I don't think Castro is a guy that blocks Gleyber. I think the reason he's playing third at all is a backup plan if they don't sign Machado. But you got to think that they're going after Machado.
And Machado can play short too.
Machado should be playing short.
Yeah, so I mean that's another thing too. You move Gleyber around because the Yankees are sitting on this pot of gold, so to speak, that they're going to be trying to give to Harper and Machado if they get both of those guys, which I don't know if that's realistic, but
I mean, where else are they going to go? I mean,
Philadelphia's supposedly going after him. I know there's some. I'm a big Cardinal guy. There's some rumors that Cardinal fans are excited about Machado, and that's not happening. But I mean,
I could see Philadelphia getting Harper, but I mean, you know, are you giving up on Franco to go get Machado? Are you?
Yeah, for Machado, absolutely. But Machado plays short, and you have J.P. Crawford there.
Yeah,
but
if J.P. Crawford. I mean, you know, you've got a former first-round pick that hasn't even had a chance.
Prospects don't block top five players in baseball, though.
I think, and those of you national fans that are screaming that Harper is going to re-sign Washington.
I think he's all but gone. No, there's no chance.
No, there's no chance, because they're already against the luxury tax. Like, that's why they didn't go out and sign Melanson or, you know, or Chapman or Jansen this year, is because they couldn't afford to go over the luxury tax. You think Harper's going to, you know, take a team-friendly deal? I mean, let's be – if he was going to do that,
Boris,
he would have done it 3 years ago.
Number one, Scott Boras is the guy there. One thing that I do keep falling back on is there's a lot of Scott Boras – this does mean something. I'm telling you, this might sound like bullshit, but it means something. There's a lot of Scott Boras clients like Matt Wieters and stuff that float around until March and end up somewhere, and the Nationals seem to always scoop up a Scott Boras guy late.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that stuff doesn't seem like it means anything, but you have to believe those agents do that stuff, right?
Oh, for sure.
Because they do it in Latin America, and that's how you get packages of players like that. It's illegal to do that, but you know, the Red Sox recently got caught doing that.
Yeah.
And they had to they can't sign anybody this year, and they had to give up all their guys from last year, which is kind of an insane penalty. But if you are in denial that agents do that, you're wrong. I mean, remember in the NBA?
Somebody did it with
free agent Joe Smith, and they had to give him back the pick. They couldn't sign him, and they had to forfeit a first-round pick because they had an illegal deal with an agent.
Yeah.
Like, you know that stuff happens.
Yeah, I mean, if you think that the Nationals signed Matt Wieters because they felt he gave them the best chance to win over Derek Norris, you're absolutely insane, because there's
And they gave him a 2-year deal, and they gave him like $20 million. Like,
no,
they didn't have that. They're competing against themselves.
They did that to try to pony up to, or, you know, cozy up to Boras, because they know Harper's coming up, and there is, you know, they want a shot at him. You know, they did not do that because, by all accounts, I mean, yes, Matt Wieters is a better offensive player at this point in their careers, probably, but the defensive comparison, there's none. I mean, Matt Wieters is a god awful catcher.
Yeah, it's. I remember I still have it. I think the baseball prospectus that had Matt Wieters is like the Pacoda projection is like the best player in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work out. I mean, he's still a solid player, so don't get me wrong about that. But yeah, defensively he gets bad reviews because I think it's hard to be a 6'5 catcher and get a lot of calls because the umpire is looking over the top of you, and it's kind of hard for them to judge the low strike, and they're looking in between, you know, in the slot between the hitter and the umpire, and when the guy's 6'5, it's hard to gauge, you know, where the bottom of the zone and stuff is. So I think it's different, and umpires don't handle things that are different very well because it's obviously harder for them to gauge it. Umpiring is a lot of on feel. I umped a lot of high school games. I know I'm not an expert by this any means. I umped some high school and some college games in the summer leagues and stuff. And it's the bottom of the zone. You can't tell where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
It's all feel. You have it, and with a 6'5 catcher, it looks different, right? And it's, if it looks different, you're like, oh, there's no way that can be a strike. I know that sounds stupid, but if you've done it, you know. And it's like, I know, like I said, I'm not a major league umpire by any stretch, and those guys are way better at their job than I could ever dream of being when I was a amateur umpire getting 65 bucks a game. But I mean, those guys, like,
but
there's something
the way,
to that. Am I insane?
The umpires in my slow pitch softball league get paid more than that.
Oh, I'm sure they do. So they have to deal with drunk adults, though. So, so if, right. If it's anything like the slow pitch softball leagues I played in, so.
All right, let's move on.
I'll pick you off the Gleyber Torres thing, though. The Mets, though, with Ahmed Rosario.
Oh, yeah, Ahmed Rosario.
Yeah.
Because he's doing the same thing, because there is no faith that David Wright is
Jose
ever
Reyes.
Coming back.
Yeah. Jose Reyes is the third baseman now, which is, you know, he's a good serviceable guy for now.
I think he's better as a utility infielder at this point in his career. I mean, he's a guy that should be filling in all around the diamond. I mean, I wish they would give Flores more run, and I know he's not a great defender at third.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, dude has some pop in his bat, and we just don't get to see it because he's kind of buried in the depth chart.
But Ahmed Rosario is playing shortstop regularly for the team in Vegas. So, by the way, he's going to put up insane numbers because it's in Vegas. So watch him this year. Eric Thames, breaking news, has hit a home run for the Brewers. So that's interesting. But Rosario is going to play third. He's going to play third base every 10 to 12 days. I don't know what that entails, but that obviously is, in my opinion, he's getting prepped for a call-up, no?
I think so. I mean,
as Dougal Cabrera is the free agent next year, he's a shortstop right now. He's solid. You're not going to unseat him. But, you know, with the uncertainty at third base, David Wright, I think over under 25 at-bats for the remainder of his career, I think that's a fair question. Mm-hmm. And I would
probably take the under.
So would I. And I think Rosario can step in there and give you close to league average offense with above average defense, and can't go wrong with that. So.
Yeah, he's a guy in, you know, deeper formats, NL only. That it might not be a bad idea to stash him, especially if you're struggling at the shortstop or third base position, or you're looking for a guy who could come up in a couple months.
And you better do it now, because playing in Vegas, he's going to put up cartoon numbers, and the numbers are going to look a lot better than he's going to be. So
I mean,
do it now before
sure
he starts
putting
up stats.
Most of our listeners have heard, but I mean, Vegas is the Coors Field. And I mean, how interesting, I mean, you know, the Raiders, you know, the Oakland Raiders and the NFL are moving to Vegas. How soon until we get a Major League Baseball team that decides to move there?
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna draft the Las Vegas Kickers, because I like Denver Kickers, and Denver Kickers always seem to make – they're good for a 60-yarder a season, right?
Yeah, usually.
Vegas might be the same thing. But
all right, let's move on, and I got to mention our sponsor, and that's the Draft app. On Draft, it's draft day every day. Draft is a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts, just like the ones you do at the beginning of your season-long league. They last for just one night and only take minutes to complete. And I can tell you, and Matt can tell you, because Matt and I have been going head-to-head all
week. This is really
long.
It's really fun.
It is actually a blast.
Honestly, God, it's really fun. It's the best DFS service I've ever used, and that's easy for us. Oh, they're sponsoring you. No, I'm dead serious, because you don't have to worry about, you know, not, oh, I can't play this guy because everybody's going to play him. You know what I mean? Or you have to play Arenado.
You can't afford blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. You get to draft these guys. And I mean, you and I did two drafts this morning, and it took us, what, a total of 3 minutes?
I was going to say 5 minutes, is because I kind of took forever on one of my picks. And you get 30 seconds a pick.
60 seconds.
Yeah, 60 seconds a pick. You need two pitchers and five hitters. And it's a blast. It really is, because you kind of – little gamesmanship goes into it, because like, oh, well, there's only one pitcher on today's slate that I like, so I had better grab him now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't cancel him out.
Well, especially when you're playing with your buddies like you and I played, you know, I knew kind of some of the guys you wanted, and you obviously know some of the guys I wanted, because I can't remember what pitcher it was, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get this guy with my next pick. And then you just swiped him from me, and in one of our
Richards?
Matches – it wasn't Garrett Richards. It was somebody
Darrell
else.
Cotton?
No, I can't remember. I'll just pull up my draft app right now and
check.
How
about that?
But I'm absolutely murdering you in one of them right now, because I had Miguel Sano. So, which is good because you've been crushing me all week long. I think we've had four.
I beat you. Yeah, I got you too.
You beat me like four in a row, I think. but on draft, you can play for free, or better yet, you can play for money. Get this. Your chances of winning money on draft are almost three times better than your chances of winning on the other sites. If you're playing fantasy for money and not spending hours a day doing it, you absolutely should try playing on draft. Download the draft app now and just search draft in the app store. It will come up first. Be sure to use our promo code FWFB when you download. You get 100% bonus up to $600 when you deposit. Again, search draft in the app store and be sure to enter the promo code FWFB for that bonus. Yeah, you and I have been playing. It's a ton of fun. I'm going to set up some kind of free. I'm going to set up a free league on Thursdays, and a paid league on Fridays. So find me on the draft app. You can search by my username, which is the same as my Twitter, Justin Mason FWFB. Add me as a friend, and I'll invite you to the league on Thursday and Friday. You know, this obviously coming out Thursday, you may not have had time to listen, but next week we'll definitely do it again. And we'll do it as long as they're sponsoring us and maybe even longer, because honestly, I'm having a blast doing it.
Yeah, it's really fun. I like it a lot.
So, all right, let's, and then I wanted to mention, you guys mentioned, Garrett from Austin, who won our free shirt. Garrett, if you haven't yet, reach out to me either on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Or reach out to me, probably via emails easier, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or justinmasonfantasy @gmail.com. And I'll make sure I send you your free Friends of Fantasy Benefits t-shirt. And if you want to win some free Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear, give us a rate and review. How we're going to do it is, you know, on Mondays, you know, probably every other week, we're either going to do a random draw or one of us is going to pick our favorite. And, you know, if we pick our favorite, that means you're going to get a Friends Fantasy Benefits item. If it's part of the random draw, you'll probably get one of the Rec Room items. But we're going to be doing it all season long, at least twice a month, maybe more, especially if we order some more Friends Fantasy Benefits gear. I know we got a new logo, so maybe we need to get some shirts with a new logo on it, too. Give us a 5-star review. You don't have to send it to me via email or Twitter. All you got to do is review, and I'll announce it, and you got to contact me. Garrett from Austin, thank you for the review. It was a fantastic. Matt picked that one out of all of them.
I did.
And the next one will be random draw. And after that, maybe I'll let Mike pick. So we'll see, though. All right. Let's move on because we are already running close to an hour, and we still have a ton to talk about. We're going to talk real quickly about Carson Kelly's future after Yadier Molina's extension. I'm assuming you only put this on here because you're a Cardinals fan. Because
no, well,
I don't give two shits about catching prospects.
Hey, well, some guys roster. I personally don't roster catching prospects either. And I do think Carson Kelly's a league average hitter when he's all said and done. Not just for catcher, but league average hitter when he's all done with his growth process there and.
Yeah, but I mean, how long is that going to take?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, with catching prospects, it does take years. But this is more. I wanted to include this more because, like, kind of falls with what we talked about, Joey Gallo. What do you do with your prospect when the guy in front of him gets an extension and kind of messes with his future? And I think with Carson Kelly, it's a little different. You can probably don't have to hold on to Kelly as much as you would anywhere else because I do think he's going to be the backup in 2018 and probably 2019. And then he will start there, and you don't really want to hold him for years just to be a starting catcher.
No.
That doesn't make sense. But then, like, I want to touch on this, like, with Joey Gallo, because Beltre got extended, and they kind of put Gallo in limbo, too. So it's a case-by-case basis, obviously.
But you look at Glenn. Things get worked out, though.
I mean, they do.
You know, I mean, look what they're doing with
look at Cyber Torres.
Yeah, I was just about to say, with Torres in New York, you know, prospects get moved around. Look at what Billy Hamilton, you know, what happened to Billy Hamilton. You know, he was a shortstop. You know, prospect. No, would he be more valuable if he was still a shortstop? Sure. But Duke was elite for a reason. And he's still an elite fantasy player.
Yeah, you know? he's such a stud defensively in center field, too. It's hard to envision him in the infield. But
yeah, typically guys don't move to a position that they're not going to be better at defensively.
Yeah, I hear you.
So
yep. You always move down the spectrum. Yeah.
To me, I'm always the guy who's churning and burning prospects anyways.
But I did that too. You saw in our league.
In the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League. I mean, you did that. But I'm always typically the guy. There's only one league I have right now where I'm like actively rebuilding, but it's really tempting to just churn and burn guys because I want to win.
Get offers all the time, I bet. You get offers all the time.
Oh, yeah. But they're usually insane. And so, I mean, I tend to to go away from them. But
the thing with fantasy baseball is everybody wants to be the first guy on a guy. And I don't know why. It's kind of some sort of, I got the shiny new toy before you did. I was in on Joe Johnson before you were, so I'm smarter than you. I think that's kind of what plays into it a little bit. And
I think that honestly comes from the industry.
It does, and you can figure out exactly who those people are five minutes to your league.
Because everybody wants to be looked at as the Paul Sporer,
the savvy
who
guy.
He nailed Corey Kluber before anybody else, and he deserves the credit for pumping him up the way he did. But people remember that. People remember, oh man, you were the guy that was on Mike Trout, and roster again before everybody else. But at the end of the day, I don't care because if you can be first on the guy who's going to help you in 2 or 3 years, I want to be first in the league at this time.
You don't want to be last on a guy. That's the thing.
Because no one remembers, honestly, I have no idea. I got an idea. I think you finished fourth or fifth last year, but I honestly don't remember. But you know I won that league 2 years ago.
I finished third.
Okay, but see? But you know I won, and I'll never let you forget it.
I got second to last the year before, and I turned and burned all my prospects and got third. So I'll take it.
I don't care. Things get worked out, guys get traded, guys move positions, it all works out for the best. I don't think, we used to say, oh man, guy goes to first base and that hurts his fantasy value. But at first base ain't what it used to be.
A great example of this is Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You look at their outfield situation right now, and Josh Bell was an outfielder. They have a deficiency at first. They moved Josh Bell to first, and now they still have Austin Meadows, who has nowhere to play, but I'm not down on Meadows because of that.
No, because they'll make room for him, or he'll end up on someone else's team.
Yeah,
they'll make room
for him. I don't either, but they'll move somebody, and I don't know how it's going to play out.
No, they'll move McCutcheon. They'll move McCutcheon at some point. If they don't compete this year, McCutcheon will get moved to the deadline, and he'll end up, in Boston he'd probably be a great fit with the Dodgers right now. Could you imagine if their outfield struggles or doesn't stay healthy? I mean, he gets moved to there for, God knows who, Dodgers.
Nationals, when Jason Witt gets hurt, they're going to have an opening in outfield.
Or if nothing pans out in terms of what's going on in Texas. So, I mean, Austin Meadows will be in. And so don't worry about guys who are blocked, That's to me, I think that is one of the most overrated parts.
Definitely is. Players good enough, there's going to be room somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Yankees are doing that with Torres, making sure they're not in that situation with moving all the guys around. So it's it works.
All right. We're gonna move real quickly through some notable call-ups. The guys that made the major leagues,
Probably just the first couple on this list of you.
We'll just go quickly. Yandy Diaz, what do you think of him playing third base in Cleveland?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's getting a lot of hype, and I'm here to pour some water all over it. You look at the numbers. You look at the numbers, first of all, there's a picture of him going around on Twitter with a sleeveless shirt, and he's built like a Greek god.
He is.
And I think people kind of buy into that. But you look at the numbers. He controls his strike zone very well. Controls the plate very well, I should say. Walks a good amount. Strikes out a little bit too much for a guy, but I mean, even as recently as 2015 in AA, he walked more than he struck out. So, I mean, that gives you an idea. He knows what he's doing at the plate.
And I mean, he only struck out like 17% of the time last year at AA.
Yeah, so I misspoke on that. So you're right about that. But the thing with Diaz is he's an iffy glove at third base. He's got all the raw tools. He just kind of puts himself in bad positioning with the footwork and everything like that. Jose Ramirez is at second base, so Kipnis returns. Kipnis should be back, I believe, by the end of the month. So Diaz is kind of have a shorter audition. He might stick as a utility guy after that because he's spent some time at second base. spent some time in the outfield in the minor leagues. But I kind of think at third base, he's a slightly better version of Adonis Garcia for the Braves.
Yeah.
He kind of fits that kind of skill set with me. Not a lot of power, not a lot of speed, makes some good contact and, you know, won't kill you.
I think he's only going to be manning third base as long as Kipnis is hurt.
Yeah.
And who knows with Kipnis's injury, I mean, that could linger. But to me, I think the Indians are another one of those teams that they want to win now. And I'm not going to be surprised if the Kipnis injury lingers, that they don't trade. They've got some minor league prospects, like some good ones. And would it be surprising to see them get moved for a third baseman?
No, because their window is now with that starting pitching the guy. You don't know if it's going to be healthy or not. So you know, if it's healthy,
I know teams don't like to move guys in division, but Todd Frazier's right there, and he's probably not going to cost, you know, much more than, you know, I don't know, a Francisco Mejia.
He's got less than, no way, I wouldn't do that if I was Cleveland, but Frazier's only got less than a year left on his deal. So
yeah,
Well, you can ask.
I wouldn't do that either, but I wouldn't have traded Clint Frazier for Andrew Miller last year.
Yeah. Can't argue with it. They made it the World Series.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It worked out really, really well. But I wouldn't, at the time, I was like, oh, man, that seems like a pretty heavy, because it wasn't just Clint Frazier, right? It was Justice Sheffield, and I'm blanking who else was on it. I mean, that was a huge price to pay for a middle reliever.
But still
a middle reliever. I mean, you know, and like, did they really know at the time that they were going to use him the way they did, or did they just, was that just circumstance?
Well, and they can't use him the way they did all the time.
No, you definitely can't. But so, I mean, at the end of the day, like, and that was a guy that had years left on his contract. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them just, again, go all in. They haven't won a World Series now in, what, 70, 80 years. You know, go ahead and pay the price. So, I mean,
the Cubs gave up Torres for Chapman, so you don't know.
You know, Diaz, for me,
he's extremely mad.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, dude hit 9 home runs between
a lot of doubles and
triple A last year.
A lot of doubles, but he's not going to get enough time to get his feet wet, because by the time he gets comfortable, he's going to get...
He's also 25 years old, which means he didn't hit double digits as a 24-year-old in the minors last year.
Nope.
So yeah, I'm out on Diaz as well.
I wanted to talk about him though, because he was other podcasts were chirping him up a lot, and I just kind of shaking my head a little bit. Other podcasts were talking him up a lot.
Oh yeah, I haven't heard other. I mean, like I said, I've been a little out of it the last few days, but Diaz for me, you know. Like, best case scenario is Kipnis is injured through the All-Star break. Diaz fills in and maybe pops you 4 to 5 home runs and steals you a handful of bags. I mean, how valuable is that? Even an AL only. I mean, is that really that valuable? So
no, it's not.
I mean, I like this next guy a lot. Yeah, let's talk about Jacoby Jones, because
we were on him this winter.
Yes, we were. And I have him in a couple AL only leagues. He's already popped his first home run, I believe, right?
Yep, yes, sir.
So let's talk about some Jacoby Jones. What are your thoughts on him for us this season?
I think he's got staying power, because you look at the depth chart in center field behind him is Andrew Romine and Mikey Matuk and Tyler Collins.
A whole lot of the ghost of ghosts.
And Anthony Gose is around, and they might sign Melvin Upton,
But I mean,
then they're still a hole in right field too. So until JD Martinez gets back, so yeah, Jacoby Jones is a guy that's worth investing in for me, because he's got that power speed combination that we all love, and we talked about him in depth this offseason. I don't want to get too much into him, because you can go back and read what I wrote about him when I wrote up the Detroit system, and listen to our podcast about him, because I know we went in hard on Jacoby Jones. He can play infield. He can play center field. He can play right field. He's going to play everywhere. He's going to get at bats in multiple situations for the Tigers. He's kind of their super sub, but he's being used in center field right now.
Mm-hmm. And depending on what site you use, he might have multi-positional eligibility already. He could play third base or outfield if Castellanos gets hurt again or doesn't reclaim.
He looks good.
But I mean, you know, previous injury is the only thing that really predicts future injury. You know, and either way, you could give him days off. Like I said, you could play center. You could play pretty much all three outfield positions. He's got pop. He's got speed. You know, he's never going to hit for a good average. I mean, this is a guy that will probably hit 220 to 240, but he walks enough to be interesting. I mean, he's had seasons in the minor leagues where he's walked, you know, 10% of the time. I think he'll probably settle in around, you know, 6 to 8%. You know, he's going to strike out, but he's a guy that is perfect in deeper formats as a, you know, bench, as a bench bat, and can, you know, and I think he could hit, you know, 10 to 15 home runs and steal 10 to 15 bases. Now, it's not sexy. He's not going to win Rookie of the Year, but if you're playing in AL only, if you're playing in, you know, 20 team mixed, that's going to have value. You know, especially if you've got deep benches. So Jacoby Goode-Jones is a guy I love.
I comped him to Mark DeRosa when I wrote him up just because of the positional eligibility. He's a bigger guy. Strikes out a lot, but is a solid player, can play anywhere. I mean, 2016 he missed some time because he's had an Alex Reyes kind of deal where he failed the drug suspension in the Arizona Fall League and missed part of the season. But in his last full season in the minors in 2015, he had 525 at-bats. He hit .257, .322 OBP, 16 homers and 25 steals, 25 doubles. So, I mean, their potential is there. This dude can hit. He's got speed for days, so it's exciting. I got to scoop up.
Yeah, I think if you're in anything deeper than a 15-team mixed, he should not be on your waiver wire.
No.
And people that are saying, well, when JD Martinez comes back, when guys get
they got
healthy,
two outfield holes, not one.
Yeah, well, not only that, they have also got one of the oldest teams in baseball.
Yep.
You know, I mean, this is a team that is rostering guys like, I love Miguel Cabrera, and I was huge on him this year, but they're also rostering, you know, older guys in Ian Kinsler. I mean, you know, this is a team that could get banged up and will need him throughout the year. So I think he, like you said, I think he's got staying power. So let's move over to Jacob May, who surprisingly wins a job out of this came out of nowhere to me.
It did.
Because, I mean, to me, I was hearing, you know, it's all about Tilson. And then I was hearing these rumors of Reimer Liriano, who was a guy I loved for years and never has been able to.
I love Reimer.
I did too. But he kept getting injured and just never really reached his potential. And so Jacob May was a guy who I did not expect to claim a job. But what are your thoughts on him for this year?
You're drafting him for one thing, and it's not too dissimilar to what your game plan was for Charlie Tilson. Just kind of pivot to May. I mean, you're drafting him for cheap steals, and I wouldn't roster him in anything other than AL only. But I think he's a guy with. You know, Tilson's coming back. I think a Tilson May platoon, it actually might be kind of productive in a cheap way for which is all the White Sox concern. That's how bad the organization depth chart is right now, though.
Yeah.
They had to pluck down and go get Jacob May, who missed part of his last season and wasn't overly impressive in AAA with a .309 OBP.
But 19 steals and a half season.
Zero power. The year before that, he had 38 steals, but power is not a part of his game. It's all speed, kind of a slap hitter. And he's got a higher floor because he plays such good defense. He's rangy out there. Mm-hmm. He's a real quick twitch guy. Third round pick in 2013 from Coastal Carolina, which won the national title this year, I believe, for baseball. Mm-hmm. So it is a good baseball school. Good pedigree out there. But, yeah, I like Jacob May if you can get him for nothing. I'm not trading for him in any leagues. I'm not even using a waiver claim that's over the top half of your league to get this guy. But, I mean, if you can scoop him up for just as a free agent or you have a bottom third waiver claim in your league, take the plunge because you can get some cheap steals. Nobody behind him in that roster. Zero guys. It's pretty much
waiting for Tilson to come back. And who knows if Tilson comes back and if Jacob May – like if Jacob May can perform, if he can hit – if he can make enough contact and hit for a decent enough average, I don't think there's any reason why they need to give Tilson the job. I mean, May could run away. I mean, you know, sorry for the pun. He could run away with his job because he, you know, I mean, I think he's got a decent enough floor that he could hit for .250 to .260 and be stealing bags left and right. And like you said, the defense is great. So, you know, why not? And you got to think they're going to be moving guys like Melky and Avisail Garcia as soon as they can.
Dare I say he runs away with the job by May?
Oh, God. All right, let's... that's absolutely fucking atrocious. let's move on and talk about
speaking
some other guys.
Speaking of atrocious,
yeah,
this Reds triumvirate of Amir Garrett, Cody Reed, Robert Stevenson. All three of them made the big club. Garrett didn't make it out of spring, but he's, by all intents and purposes, their number four starter. He's slated to start against the Cardinals this weekend. Long term, I like Cody Reed the best out of this bunch. I think you probably disagree. I think you're a Garrett guy.
I am a Garrett guy, yeah.
Yeah, I told you, I went into depth with my concerns about Garrett. Cody Reed, I don't have those concerns about, and Cody Reed has a better out pitch than Garrett does, so that's why I'm Cody Reed camp.
And I get that. I mean, for me, a Garrett is, one, I mean, I love the fastball. I think the slider has kind of come together.
Changeup's improving.
Yes, it is. But I mean, and he's inconsistent with all of his pitches, you know, because, you know, what people, I think, forget, and something you've mentioned a number of times, is this was a kid who was playing basketball. Like, he didn't come up playing, you know, he didn't come up necessarily as a baseball-only guy. And so he still has some development to go. He's older. He's, you know, I think, what, 24 years old. So, you know, they've got to kind of give him a shot and... but I mean, one, he doesn't have the miles on his arm that a lot of other 24-year-olds have, which I like. And I love the athleticism. And I really, the progression he's made over the course of the last 2 years to me is really, really amazing. And I think you could see more regression. I think this is one of those late bloomer types because he started playing so late and committed to baseball full time so late. And I understand. It's not that I dislike Cody Reed. I just prefer Garrett.
No, and that's fine. I think we're both out on Robert Stevenson, right? Like, I mean, forever.
I don't know why he isn't a
closer by now. Reliever.
Yeah, he's
got two pitches.
Be closer.
Two good pitches. Two good pitches.
This is a team that seems to like you know. I don't know who mentioned it on Monday. They said the Reds bullpen was, you know, was better than the rotation. The Reds had a historically bad
bullpen. Think that was our guess. I don't want to pick up
too
much.
Oh, okay. Well, I love Alex, but to his defense, it can't be any worse than it was last year. But Iglesias should be the Andrew Miller of this team, and Stevenson should be the closer.
Yeah, I'm on board with that, and I just think, by the way, in redraft, I want to make it clear I'm not touching any of these guys this year. Dynasty.
I mean, like I've got Garrett in. He was like my 43rd round pick in my NFBC draft.
That's fair. Yeah, that's different.
So at this point, you're not drafting those leagues anymore.
You probably don't know top off the top of your head, but those other two guys probably went before him, right?
That Stevenson did, but I know for sure Cody Reed did.
Yeah. That's about where I'm at. I'm sure Reed probably went five rounds or so higher. Not much. But I, like I said, Cody Reed still has that out pitch that Garrett doesn't have. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm still on the Cody Reed. Yeah, he was atrocious can be last year in the majors. He got beat up everywhere. But I'm still in on that. The plus fastballs by both these guys from the left side, and I give the edge to Reed with the slider. It's the Reds have a lot of arms, but none of them are great. They're all mid-rotation guys like this.
And I mean, both these guys are going to be in the rotation here shortly. If you know, I mean, Garrett's already slated to be the fourth guy.
You see who their fifth guy is?
No.
They're calling up Bronson Arroyo to be their fifth guy.
Jesus Christ.
So I don't know what that's about.
But who knows how long Scott Feldman... I mean, do you have any faith in Rookie Davis?
Opening day starter Scott Feldman, too. No. Yes. I didn't even include Rookie Davis on this list, but Rookie Davis is a big, massive 6'5", 255-pound guy that gets ground balls over strikeouts. Good profile, nice safe floor in that ballpark.
I'd say a 65-grade name.
Yeah, until next year when he's not a rookie anymore.
Yeah, he definitely would drop down then.
Yeah, but none of these guys really are exciting for me. I actually prefer guys from the next group, which is kind of surprising considering where they pitch. But,
all right. Well, let's move on to the next group and talk about Kyle Freeland, German Marquez, Antonio Scalzia.
German Marquez, Kyle Freeland, and Antonio.
You put this on there just for one fucking name, didn't you?
And Antonio Senzatella. And Freeland and Senzatella are surprisingly one rotation spots with Colorado, and Marquez is in the bullpen.
And which doesn't make sense to me, even though I do kind of like Kyle Freeland.
Yeah, Freeland is a ground ball, nice ground ball guy. I think he's got a relative level of safety in that park. I love Freeland because he's a Missouri Valley guy. Mm-hmm. I went to school at Illinois State. I watched him pitch a little bit, and I believe he's at Evansville or Indiana State, one of those two. Watched him pitch a little bit out there. He could spin it. Command of his pitches was damn good for college guy. I mean, still there for not right now, but the lack of walks and the heavy ground ball tilt is, if anything's going to play in Colorado, that is. The Colorado does have a good infield defense behind him. I don't think he's going to be a guy that you're going to run out to grab for your waiver wire, and he's definitely going to be a guy you have to stream and be careful with who you're starting him against. Mm-hmm. But I think Kyle Freeland has, if he pulled a Tyler Anderson, I wouldn't be completely shocked. And then Germán Marquez pitched very well last year, and he's in the bullpen now. I don't know why that is. They stole him from Tampa in that C-Dick trade. But I like Marquez. He's got a good four-pitch mix. Antonio Senzatella is a guy I kind of want to talk about.
I know absolutely nothing about him.
Yeah, he's the lesser known of this triumvirate, I guess I'll call him. He shot up from Double-A. He has five career Double-A starts to his name. And they gave him the rotation spot. What's notable is what he did in 2015, pitching in the Cal League. Which, if you don't know, Cal League is like Coors Field.
Yeah, exactly.
154 innings, 131 hits, and 143 strikeouts in 26 starts, a 2.51 ERA. Career ERA across three different levels in the minors, 2.45. His Ks per nine across three levels in the minors, though, it's only 6.5.
Yeah.
So that's the downside. He's a ground ball tilt guy. He doesn't walk anyone. The control is impeccable. He's a right-handed Kyle Freeland, essentially. So I kind of get what the Rockies are doing here. I think they think they have the ability to go for it this year, so they're trying to get some relative safety. I'm a big Jeff Hoffman guy, but he's starting the year in AAA, and he can't seem to get it together. I think his best
I was surprised because I thought they were going to start him in the bullpen.
Yeah, they evidently did not. I'm a big Hoffman guy. I loved him getting drafted, but I think having your best pitch be a curveball on Coors Field probably isn't the best route.
Agreed. Well, maybe he becomes trade bait.
Freeland and Senzatella are sinker guys, sinker slider guys, and I think that's a combination of guys that might work in Coors. I mean, obviously the odds are stacked against them. Don't pay for these guys. If you scoop them up, you can see. Let them pitch a couple times and see what they do. Don't rush into it and grab them now. But
mm-hmm.
I think they have a relatively boring, but there's not a lot of upside, but the floor is relatively high, if that makes
and,
sense.
And you then start there could be depth pieces in NL only, you know, especially on the road, and, you know, especially if they show that they can succeed. I mean, they do, like you, I think you mentioned already, they do have the profiles of what we're looking for in Colorado, and there has been guys who've shown relative success, Tyler Anderson, you know, being one of them. John Gray being another, being able to have success in Coors. You know, it's not amazing success, but it's usable in deeper formats.
Yeah, not exciting upside, but they have major league jobs, so that puts them in the relevant and only, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
let's move on. Let's talk about Jose De Leon, forearm injury. I mean, I'm sure that's why Mike couldn't be on the podcast tonight. Because he's crying over this.
I guess there was some buzz with De Leon because when the minor league rosters came out in the last couple of days here, and he wasn't on the AAA roster for the Rays. It was kind of like a down low thing, I guess. And then you find out later he's been placed on the 7-day DL down there in AAA. He has minor discomfort in the flexor mass muscle in his forearm.
That is not a good sign.
And
yeah,
I'm not an expert by any means, but flexor mass muscle, Lance Lynn dealt with this, and then mm-hmm. ultimately had that dreaded word I don't want to use.
Tommy John, baby.
And with how aggressively the Dodgers were trying to dump him this year, this offseason, it was weird, right?
It was weird. I mean, I don't want to. I don't want to.
I don't think the upside for De Leon is. Are you accusing the Dodgers
of being AJ Preller?
No, I'm not. I'm not. But what I do think is I've kind of been vocal about this offseason. I don't think the upside for De Leon is as high as people initially thought it was.
Yeah, and I mean I've been right there with you, and
yeah,
you know, and talked about how this to me I sold every share I had of him this year.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you knew something.
Well, I mean, I didn't think he would get injured, but I didn't love the move to the AL East.
I thought
maybe it would get him up a little bit quicker this year, but long term, and that's usually what we care about with prospects, anyways. I didn't like it, so yeah, I moved him.
Yeah, and it's weird because, you know, I don't want to jump to any conclusions now because we don't know enough about this. They keep calling it minor. But anytime, you know, you're a guy you traded a serviceable Logan Forsythe for to get hurt before you break camp isn't really a minor thing when it's an arm injury.
I mean, obviously, if you have him right now, like if you're an owner, you got to hold because you can't. You're gonna get you know pennies on the dollar right now, but let's say you're not an owner and you are rebuilding. Are you actively going out and trying to buy him?
No.
Okay. I can see doing it if I can get him. If I can get him for like 20 cents on the dollar.
What size league am I in?
Let's say 16-team mix.
No. Because I think he's mid rotation upside. And I think there's probably a handful of mid-rotation guys on the waiver wire in that league.
Okay. Give me one second while I bring up a list of prospects.
Or just anybody that's on the waiver wire in a league like that?
Well, no. But I want to do kind of a would-you-rather with some guys who are widely considered top 200 guys. I want to see where you're at. So I'm going to start... I'm going to start with Sean Reed Foley. You want Reed Foley or you want Jose De Leon?
I'll take De Leon because I think the upside for Reed Foley is higher, but I think you have to wait at least a year and a half longer, and they both pitch in the AL East.
Okay. So I'll take what about Eric Fetty or Jose De Leon?
That's tough. I'll take I just had my prospect rankings. I had De Leon probably 30 spots higher, so I'm still going to go De Leon because we don't really know what this arm injury is about. So I'll still go De Leon.
Okay.
That's close, though. That gap is narrowed for me.
Robert Gesellman or Jose De Leon?
I'll take Gesellman.
All right. A guy who's farther away, Tristan McKenzie.
I'll take McKenzie, but I love McKenzie. That's a rational love, but I love him.
Jason Groom.
I'll take Groom. I think the upside's higher.
Let me do some non-pitchers real quick. Alex Verdugo.
Ooh, that's really tough. I think they were ranked back-to-back in my Dodgers list before De Leon got moved. I'll go De Leon because I think Verdugo is like a Melky Cabrera light.
I love Verdugo, so.
But Melky Cabrera is a good comp. Good hit tool with about 10 to 12 homers, 15 homers.
I think there's more power in that bat coming.
Yeah, but he's super young. It'll be a while.
Zach Collins.
Collins.
You're taking Collins over De Leon?
High upside bat like that, yeah.
Okay. Let's do a post-type guy. A.J. Reed or Jose De Leon?
A.J. Reed. I'm a believer still.
Okay. Well, last guy. Richard Urena.
I'll take De Leon.
Okay. All right. Well, that should give people kind of a little bit of an understanding of where you're at on De Leon. I'm probably taking all of those guys.
Over De Leon? Okay. I can't fault you for it. I mean, like we talked about the upside isn't as immense, and now obviously this arm injury. So
yeah, I'm trying to look
through the guy. Talk to me in a month, and we'll see where we're at.
And I think it's a good guy to kind of revisit, especially if we hear whether there's a seriousness to this injury or not. All right, we're gonna finish out. I'm gonna skip Frankie Montas. You know, I mean, I know he made the team, but he's a long reliever right now. So
skip the Padres guys too.
Skip the Padres guys. I want to talk about Mitch Haniger and Rowdy Tellez. So let's start with Haniger. He's hitting second.
That's exciting, right?
For the Mariners, yeah. I mean, I think this is, and you guys, I think all kind of mentioned it on Monday. I think he is a dark horse for Rookie of the Year. I don't think he's going to win it because guy you guys have been shitting on for the last 2 weeks in Bradley Zimmer is going to win it. But talk to me about Mitch Haniger.
I think that award's already been made for Benintendi. They're just holding on to it for him, to be honest.
Yeah, let's wait. Like, here's the thing, and I think this is something nobody mentions, and you guys definitely didn't mention on Monday, is that the Rookie of the Year is won in the last, you know, half of the season. Like,
you're right.
It's all, you know, I mean, and it's rarely given to the guy that actually deserves it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, my prime example is the year Will Myers won it in the American League. Chris Archer on his team was a much better overall player and more valuable to the team, had a better season, and didn't win, you know, because it came from hype. So yes, Benintendi's name is probably going to get him the award, but, I will bet dollars to donuts by the end of the season, that Zimmer has been more impactful than a better overall player than Benintendi.
Yeah, Zimmer is good at is going to be more flashy because but Benintendi is solid at everything, which Zimmer is not.
And that's great for real baseball, but you know, and I understand that the Rookie of the Year award is a real baseball award, but at the end of the day, what we care about is the numbers that make up fantasy categories, and Bradley Zimmer, you know, on a day-to-day basis will smoke him while he's up. And the fact that he's not up and hasn't already been up is absolutely atrocious to me.
Yeah. I guess,
but let's move to Haniger. Sorry.
Haniger. Yeah, no, you're,
I love me some Bradley Zimmer. So
I'm going to ask you, this might be an easy answer. Who do you think led all minor league qualified hitters in OPS last year?
Mitch Haniger?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And guess who led all spring training in 2017 in hits?
Mitch Haniger?
He did.
Nice. He did.
Not that those mean anything. The OPS in the minor
league. This game would have been a lot funnier had you given me a stat that it wasn't Mitch Haniger just to make me look like an asshole.
Yeah, I could have done that, but it's okay. No, but he won the Minor League Prospect of the Year, too, if that means anything, for the Diamondbacks last year, which he should have. But Haniger, man, we both are high on Haniger. We've already talked about him to death. Two spot in that lineup is a sexy spot to hit. Cano, Cruz, and Seager behind you with Segura in front of you. It doesn't get much better than that. So Haniger, with the leg kick, new swing. Josh Donaldson's hitting coach has worked with Haniger this offseason. He's got the leg kick. He looks great. I'm scooping him wherever I can, and I think he's a dark horse for AL Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I got him. I have him in our Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, and I swooped him in my last draft of the year because, I mean, he was going for a pretty penny in drafts this year. I mean, there are some real believers out there in the fantasy industry. You know, you weren't getting a discount on him, but I do believe, and I think what we saw in spring training is somewhat legitimate. I mean, I don't think he's going to lead the major leagues in hits, but you got to love the fact he's hitting second for the Mariners. So, I think he's a guy to buy if you can. Let's move on to Rowdy Tellez, because there's been some buzz, and there's some people that believe he's going to be up soon. Do you think he's going to be up soon?
I do.
And so what do you think of him?
I do, and I think he's the type of player that can make an impact right away because he's one of those weird players. I put him in the same kind of category as Dan Vogelbach. If you think the bat's ready, you bring him up because he's not going to offer – you don't keep him down to work on defense. You're not keeping him down to do little things because he's not going to do that for you. If he's hitting, he should be up, and I think – Justin Smoke, I think it's the first time we've ever mentioned his name on a fantasy baseball podcast. When he's
it's not the first time we've mentioned him on this episode.
You're right, actually, but most of the time it is because he's not very.
It's not usually in a positive light.
Yeah, sure, and it wasn't in the previous mention. So, but the thing with Tellez is with how long can Toronto keep throwing Justin Smoke out there? And I know John Gibbons spoke very highly of Tellez this spring. Kendry Morales is locked in as a DH. And Melvin Upton got released, so Pierce might move out to left field, take some at-bats there. Ultimately, I think a Steve Pierce, Rowdy Tellez platoon at first base sounds great. I mean, elite contact skills from Tellez, 17.9% strikeout rate, and coupled with a 12% walk rate with a plus hit tool and plus power, and a very nice ballpark to hit. I don't think the situation gets much better than that.
Yeah, I think they're going to wait. They're going to play a little bit of service time games. You see him maybe up end of the month.
I don't think players like him do very well in arbitration tables, so I don't think that's going to be a big deal.
Okay. I mean, maybe he's up sooner rather than later. AL only, I think he's definitely worth a stash, maybe 16.
Yeah, you got to get him now.
Yep. Or deeper, especially if you're struggling at first base or need some depth.
Which isn't surprising if you are struggling at first base.
In AL only, it's a little bit deeper than it is NL only, but... I mean, I think, 16-team mixed or deeper, I think he's definitely worth a stash because, like you said, I think there's a good chance he'll be up in the next month. And, you know, playing in that park on that team, he could have some real impact this year.
He's won Justin Smoke cold streak, which his whole life's been a cold streak, but one more especially cold streak than to get that job, I think.
I know you said that he'd be a great platoon partner with Steve Pierce. But, I mean, Pierce has a history of health issues. He is going to be moved around the diamond because, one, the guy who plays next to him in second base has a pretty long history of injury
issues.
And
the guy that plays at shortstop does, too.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, Pierce can't play short. But
no,
he can definitely play in the outfield where they don't have a ton of depth. So, I mean, I think that I think platooning at first base is like the floor, and I think there's a ceiling of a full-time job.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Ezekiel Carrera and Pierce as the platoon in left field right now, and Smoke and Pierce is kind of a platoon at first base. I mean, one injury to any of those three guys, and I think you're looking at Tellez, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's very likely to happen, especially like you said with Steve Pierce. And Smoke has a bit of an injury history too, if I remember correctly. And he also has a history of being irrelevant.
So. I think his history is more being irrelevant than it is injury.
He was supposed to be the next thing. Remember him?
He was supposed to. He was supposed to be the next Chris Davis. You know,
2009 at Double A, 328, 449, 481 with 29 homers. I mean,
he was supposed to be the next huge power bat.
Never mind. Six homers. I misread that.
But that's going to wrap us up. Matt, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
MDTomp, FWFB is the handle. We'll be updating. I know I always say this, but I'm going to do it just when the minor league season starts. I'm going to update the prospect lists. Probably do a little piece about some of the notable call-ups if we don't touch on them here. We touched on Diaz, Jones, and May, and a lot of the Reds and Rockies pitchers in this podcast. So maybe if somebody comes up in the meantime, there'll be a little blurb on the website about them. If not, we'll touch on them. Maybe make this a weekly feature, touch on the call-ups on this show. Who knows? We're looking for feedback on this website. I'm on this podcast on twitter.com, so hit me up on there and find me, get us some show ideas. I got a lot of questions today for On Air, and it was great. There was one question I did not get to, and it was for years 2018 to 2020, who puts up better fantasy numbers in a 5x5 head-to-head categories league with between Ozzie Albies, Willie Adames, or Nick Senzel? That's a tough question. I would need to sit down and actually think about that and answer it. But I think better fantasy numbers in each category would be Albies would be runs and Albies would be steals and Adames.
Yeah, I think in that format I'm going to Albies.
Yeah, I am too. Plus, he's going to be up first out of that group. I think they're all good. You can't go wrong with
and they're all going to be up pretty quick.
They're all top 20 prospects for me, so I mean that's high praise. Yeah.
But I think in a typical roto format, I might go Senzel because I think he has the highest floor, even though he doesn't have the highest ceiling. But in a head to head categories where you want to kind of maybe spread a little bit of the categories out, I would probably go Albies.
I'd probably go Senzel because I think you're going to get 20 homers, 15 steals. Albies is going to be all steals, and Adames is going to be probably the same as Senzel, but shortstop. And shortstop's deeper than third base, which is weird to say, even though it's true. I'd probably go Senzel, but it's close. Adames will be up soon. Senzel's probably up last out of that group, but he's probably the highest upside guy.
Yeah.
and highest floor also. But both of these, it's a hard question to answer because I don't know how many teams are in the league, how many teams in the league or anything like that. But all three are good, so hold on to all three of them. What's your name? Mike Eckerd, hold on to all three of them and change your Rizzo avatar because I don't want to see that. But, yeah, good having you back on the show, man. It's
good talking to be back.
You stepped up your prospect game immensely over the last year. You're the number one prospect now for the prospect pod. So
I try. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a rate and review, especially if it's a 5-star variety. You heard earlier in the podcast what you can get out of that. And, you know, we're going to be giving away Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear. We're going to be giving away some Rec Room gear. Who knows what other swag we get. Definitely check out our sponsor Draft in the Draft app and come play with us. Because like I said, I'm going to put some leagues together this Thursday and Friday and next Thursday and Friday. So if you're a little bit too late to get in this week, we'll do it again next week as well. So definitely check that out. Read all my stuff on FanGraphs or friendsoffantasybenefits.com. I'm going to do my my full disclosure article on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. It goes over all the players I drafted on all 14 of the teams I drafted this year, 13 that I'm playing out, and then my Tout Wars team that I'm not playing out. So, and then I've got I'm running a fantasy ethics piece.
Those are always fun.
Yeah, I did one last week. It's called The Unwritten Rules over on FanGraphs, and I think I'm going to be doing some of the Roto write-ups over there on a fairly regular basis. Got to nail that down with our good buddy Paul Spohr, so definitely check that out.
A big shout-out, too, in the podcast. I want to say we're glad to see Tim McLeod doing well.
Yes. Tim McLeod suffered a heart attack, unfortunately, but he is recovering and doing well, and it seems to be getting back into the conversation of things. I don't know when he'll get back to recording, but we were definitely very scared when we heard that news, and we're glad to hear he's doing well and recovering. So, keep doing what you're doing, Tim. We love you, and hope you continue to get better. So,
and we'll have you on soon again.
Definitely. When you're feeling better, you have an open invite. That'll wrap us up. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.